Well, there's been a lot of talk in the news lately about hope. You hear a lot of that related to the political campaigns and hope of change, hope for change, hope that somebody will do something. And admittedly, there don't seem to be a whole lot of concrete discussions about just exactly what's being hoped for or how people's hopes are going to be fulfilled. It's almost like the political candidates are saying, you know, whatever you hope for, every one of you, whatever you hope for, if you'll just elect me, then that's what I'm going to bring to pass. You just elect fill in the blank, and all of your hopes will be fulfilled. And it's kind of like people are falling for that. You listen to them interview people, and, well, I'm just sure he's going to do all the things that I want him to do. He or she, as the case may be. And the problem is, of course, that's not where our hope is. It can't ever be in a politician or the government. But I tell you what I think it speaks to. It speaks to the desperation that's in our society and in our people and how desperate people are for something to change. I mean, they're desperate to get out of a bad situation, or they're desperate for something good to happen in their lives. And the good news is there is cause for hope. It just doesn't come from a political arena. You know, Joel Osteen's ministry is all about giving people hope. I think everybody ought to listen to Joel Osteen preach at least occasionally, because he knows that there are enough people in life, there are enough situations in life, there are enough evil spirits in life pulling us down. We need somebody to lift us up and to give us hope and encourage us. And he does that. That's sort of his primary ministry that the Lord's given him. And he illustrates in so many different ways how Jesus is our hope. If we're in Jesus, then we have hope, and that we can always rely on God. We can always trust Him to take care of us. You can have hope. It's not some empty promise when God gives us hope. It's a reality. And that's what I want to talk about a little this morning. What is hope? I want to define it. How is it that hope is the seed of our faith, but it's not faith? How devastating the loss of hope can be, and how we get hope back. Talk about hope, and hope is not faith, and hope is not wishing. Wishing is when we have a desire or a strong inclination for something, but we don't necessarily expect that it's going to happen. We just wish it might happen someday, maybe, but who knows? Hoping is a little bit more expectant than that. Hope is when we expect that our wishes will be fulfilled. And Romans 8:24, it says that if you already have something, then you don't have to hope for it. In other words, the point of hope is that hope is always about something we are expecting to happen at some point. And then faith is even more certain than hope is. Faith is, I know that I know that I know that something's going to happen or God's going to do something. And it's like we progress from wish to faith. In other words, the wish is the seed that starts everything, and I begin to wish for something, and then that eventually turns into hope, and then that hope becomes the seed that gets planted that generates faith in my heart. In Hebrews 11:1, Paul defined faith as faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So when he talks about faith as being substance and evidence, he's talking about something that's certain, that's unwavering. Turn to Matthew 9. See, hope is a little bit more tentative than faith is. It's not a bad thing. Hope is a good thing, because hope is the seed from which faith grows. But it's actually faith that makes things happen in the world. Matthew 9, we're just going to look at three of many examples in the Word about how faith is what makes things happen in the spirit world. Matthew 9 and verse 22. Remember, this is the woman with the issue of blood. She's come to Jesus. She said, if I can just touch his clothes, I know I'll be healed. She touches his clothes. The Bible says that power goes out of Jesus into her and heals her. And then Jesus tells her in this verse what caused that power to flow out of him. He says, daughter, take courage. Your faith has made you well. In other words, it was her faith that caused that power to flow. On down here in verse 29, Jesus has come across a couple of blind people, and he tells these guys, be it done unto you according to your faith, or in proportion to your faith. In other words, if you guys believe that you're going to go from not being able to see at all to being able to tell the difference between night and day, and that's all you believe in, well, that's what you'll have. Or if you can believe for 2040 vision or 2020 vision, it's be it done unto you according to your faith. Turn to Matthew 21. This is where Jesus gets very specific and tells us that faith makes things happen in the spirit world. In verse 21, now he had just cursed a fig tree and it died. And he said, truly I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you shall not only do what was done to this fig tree, but even if you say to this mountain, be taken up and cast into the sea, it'll happen. And all things you ask in prayer, believing, you'll receive them. So faith is what makes things happen in our lives. If we need a change in our lives, if we need something good to happen to us, then we need to have faith. We need to know that we know that we know that God is going to make things happen. If we don't have that, then we're still just hoping. But the good news is, if you can't have faith for something yet, at least begin to hope for it. And then pray that the Lord will turn that hope into faith. In Romans 15:13, Paul is praying for people, telling them about a prayer he prays for them, and he says, I pray that the hope of the Lord will fill you with joy. So begin to pray for hope, and then from that begin to pray for faith. I'll tell you a story about going from wish to hope to faith from hopelessness. After about 35 years of marriage, my dad decided that he would run off with his secretary, and he left my mother and filed for divorce and told her that she was going to get nothing out of this. He was just going to get it all, and he didn't care what happened to her, and he was gone. And you talk about hopeless. She felt pretty hopeless. She had never worked. She didn't have any job skills. She really wasn't healthy enough to work anyway at that point in her life. She had never really done the kinds of things that you learn to do when you're on your own, because father had always done those things for her. She had never balanced her checkbook. She'd never bought a car, done taxes, none of that stuff. And it was like, all of a sudden now she's out on her own. Now what's she going to do? Man, she felt hopeless. I can tell you that. And we prayed and we prayed and we prayed together. And eventually she began to wish that God would help her. She didn't have any faith it was going to happen. She was so under it. And so she hired a lawyer, and this guy was a jerk and really wasn't very helpful for her. And so, you know, she's hired a lawyer. He doesn't work out. Now what's she going to do? She's at least hoping that God is going to do something. And so she's walking through her house praying, and the Lord says, I'm going to get you the two hottest lawyers in Texas. And she goes, wow, where did that come from? But see, after that word from the Lord, faith sprang into her heart. And she believed, you know what? God's going to take care of me in this. And sure enough, the next day, she got a call back from a law firm that was one of the state representatives there in Texas, one of the hottest lawyers in Texas, and he and his partner took my mother's case on. And they were really able to protect her and take care of her. She has never worked a day in her life since then, and for her entire life since then, God had taken care of her financially. She was okay. She had gone from despair and hopelessness to wishing, to hoping, to faith, to God redeeming her. By the way, Rush Limbaugh has been talking a lot about this political hope thing that everybody's talking about, and I think he's wrong in what he's saying, because he keeps saying, no, no, hope is a bad thing. Hope is just worthless. If you're just hoping for something, nothing will ever happen. What he's talking about is empty wishing, where you're just wishing for something. Okay? That's not what we're talking about when we talk about hope. When we talk about hope, we're talking about the hope that makes you get started and go out and at least try to get something done. You know, empty wishing means I'm just going to sit around and wish. Hope means I'm going to at least do something to see it happen. God really is our only hope in this world. Turn to Jeremiah 14. The Hebrew faith is the foundation of our faith. And so a lot of times when we want to know what we believe, we look at what the Jews believed. And in Jeremiah 14, verse 8, you, hope of Israel, or you, O hope of Israel, some translations say, the Savior of Israel in time of distress, where are you now? Why are you a stranger? In other words, he's saying, you're our only hope, and we don't see you. Show up, please, quick, because without you, we're just out of luck. Jeremiah 17 and verse 7. Blessed is the man who hopes in the Lord and whose hope is in the Lord. Hope is a good thing, and we need to put our hope in the Lord, because nothing else we might hope in is going to do us any good. It's our human nature to hope in something we can see. Matter of fact, it's almost like it's our human nature to hope in anything and everything but God. I'm going to hope in my wife. I'm going to hope in my retirement plan, hope in my job, hope in my good health. I mean, whatever it is we got, that's what we're going to try to put our hope in. All of those things can fail us. God is the only hope that we have. If you never wish for something, then you'll never hope. And if you never hope, you're never going to have faith. Sometimes what folks do is they get in a bad situation, and instead of either wishing or hoping, they just start complaining and griping. Well, that's not going to do any good. We need to do something about it, something other than just empty wishing. We need to begin to hope. Hopelessness, or living in hopelessness, is devastating. I think that hopelessness is one of the darkest things that we can come across in our lives, and I think it's the most difficult thing to get out of. Because if there's no hope, why bother? Why try to solve it, or why try to get out of the pit that you're in if there's no hope? Turn to Proverbs 13:12. I mean, you can't change anything anyway. It's hopeless. Give up. That's why people turn to drugs and alcohol sometimes, I think. Proverbs 13:12 says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. If you hope and hope and hope and hope and it keeps getting deferred, your heart's going to be sick. It's devastating. I can remember one time, long time ago in my life, something happened, and I just felt like my life had been turned into a pile of ashes. I mean, everything that I had ever worked for, dreamed for, all the context of my life just kind of fell apart, and it was hopeless. I mean, there was no hope for recovery. That's how I felt. And up until that time, I had always wondered, how in the world can people become alcoholics? I mean, you know, if you're going to get drunk at night, stay drunk all night so you can't go to work the next morning, are you going to be drunk for days? How in the world are you going to keep a job, keep your family, keep your house? I mean, that's dumb. Why would you do that? And then when my life turned into a hopeless pile of ashes, I began to realize, oh, if you feel hopeless, then who cares? Why not get drunk and stay drunk? At least you don't feel the pain of what's going on. There's a radio ad that's been running here in Charlotte the last week or so, and it's for a drug and alcohol rehab center of some kind. And I thought they put the term very well. They said, we're looking for people who want to numb out. N-U-M-B, numb out. That's what people are doing. See, when they turn to alcohol or drugs, they want to numb out. Just make the pain go away. I don't care what the consequences are, because it's hopeless anyway. And in this ad, what they're trying to do is say, folks, there is hope. And so they have some people giving testimonials about how they have been delivered. And don't just numb out. There is hope. There's something that you can do. Hope is a positive seed. Hopelessness is a negative seed. Hope can grow into faith. Hopelessness can kill our faith. Hopelessness can drag us down into whatever. I mean, if you feel hopeless, well, why not do drugs or do alcohol or pornography or work all the time or whatever it is that people get addicted to? Why not? But I have good news. There is hope, and there's hope in God. I'm going to talk about that more in a minute. Sometimes life isn't completely hopeless. We just have a dream or a hope in our life that we've kind of lost sight of, or we've given up on it. We've abandoned our hope. It'll never happen. You know, I love to fly airplanes. Right after Debbie and I got married, I learned to fly, and man, I flew every chance I got. And we had a flying ministry, and boy, it was great. And then things happened, and all of a sudden, we didn't have any airplanes available anymore, and I didn't have the money to rent an airplane, and I couldn't fly anymore. And for a couple of decades, I didn't do any flying at all. And I thought I was never going to get to fly again. And so I just kind of given up on that hope. But you know what? When we moved here to North Carolina, all of a sudden the Lord opened the doors, and I was able to start flying again. Debbie was like that with college. She went to probably 3 or 4 different colleges. And finally, it just kind of gave up. Oh, well, I'll never go to college. But you know what? She's now in the fine arts department at the University of North Carolina, and she's gotten her associate's degree, and she's working for a bachelor's degree. You don't have to give up. Don't let the devil and life cheat you out of your hopes and your dreams, okay? Dare to dream, dare to wish again, dare to pray that God turns the hope that you have into faith, and that faith then into power that moves mountains and makes those hopes come about. Well, so where do we get hope from? Where does it come from in our lives? Sometimes I think we fall into a trap of going after false hope. One of those false hopes is gambling, for instance. Yeah, you know, if I could just win the lottery, then I'm sure all my financial problems would be solved. That's why it's not good for Christians to gamble, because it's just a false hope. But there are a lot of other false hopes. I know a woman right now who is certain that she'll be happy if she just divorces her husband. That's a false hope for her. I know folks, teenagers, that feel like, if I could just get out of the house, if I could just get out from under my parents, then everything would be okay. Get out on my own, I'll be okay. That is false hope. I promise you that. There are folks trusting in politicians and government. You know, if I can just get so-and-so elected, everything is going to be okay. I'll have my socialized medicine and never have to worry about paying insurance again, or whatever it is, you know. It's false hope. There are Kenyans sitting in Kenya today thinking, boy, if I could just get to America, everything would be okay, right? That's a false hope. America, as great as our country is, as wonderful as our government is, that isn't our hope. It's not where we can trust. It never is. It's never going to be. Chasing after false hopes just sets us up for failure, because false hope always disappoints us. It actually just puts off God being able to provide us with the real answer to our hope. False hope just slows things down. So where do we go for hope? I know this is going to sound like a cliche. One of the places for hope is the Word of God and good sermons. I mean, I just think that staying in church, being in church every Sunday, is a good way to maintain our hope. And matter of fact, studies show that those who have the most optimistic outlook on life are those who are going to church on a regular basis and those who are praying on a regular basis. When they start doing the surveys about who's optimistic about the economy and those kind of things, invariably, it's the ones who serve God that are the most hopeful. Why? Because they're getting their hope built up. I think Joel Osteen is a great way to get your hope built up. I think everybody ought to watch Joel Osteen at least once a month. You know, 8 o'clock Sunday morning on the Discovery Channel, watch Joel Osteen and just get a little dose of hope and encouragement. Another place that we get hope is by counting our blessings. And again, I know that that sounds really trite. Oh yeah, I've heard it all my life. Well, the truth is that solid research over and over shows that even for people that don't serve God, the quickest, the surest, and the most permanent way to get out of depression is by counting your blessings, thinking about 3 good things that happened to you today, and by doing something good for somebody else, whether you feel like it or not. And so when we get hopeless, begin to feel that way, what we need to begin to do is begin to look back and count our blessings. If you're feeling hopeless, you can wish for things to change, and empty wishing is not going to be enough. You need to ask God to help turn that into hope. And then let that hope turn into faith. Begin to count your blessings and count your blessings out of the pit that you're in. Don't stay there. Turn to Genesis 9. I want to give you a different way of looking at this. Grace brought this up last Sunday. You know, last Sunday we were talking about the flood and rainbows and how God promised not to destroy the earth. And he said, the sign of my promise is the rainbow. And let's read about that, and then I want to tell you an interesting question that Grace asked about that. Let's see. Genesis 9 actually starts down in verses 8 and 9. God says, I'm going to make this covenant with you and your descendants and with every living creature on the earth. In verse 11, I will establish my covenant with you, and all flesh shall never again be cut off by the water of flood, neither shall there again be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant which I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, for all successive generations, I will set my bow in the cloud. He's saying, I'm going to use the rainbow, a common something that you've seen and noticed all your life. I'm going to now use that as a sign to you of my promise to you that I'm not going to ever destroy the earth with flood again. And so we were talking about how God gives us these promises, and he gives us signs to know that his promise is true. And so Grace asked the question, what are your rainbows? What are the rainbows in your life? And I thought, wow, what a great question. What are the things in my life that point to the fact that God loves me and that God has promised for me and that God is my hope? What are my rainbows? And immediately, the first thing I thought of was that when Debbie and I first met, I mean, just right after we met, after two dates, the Lord began to show me things about her and began to talk to me that she was my wife. And I mean, he showed me things about her that she had never told anybody. And then the Lord gives her this poem about how we're going to get married. She had had orders to leave that area, and the Lord said, nope, you're not going to leave. Y'all are going to get married. Looked impossible. But that was God's promise through that poem. Well, for us, that was like this rainbow of God's promise that you two are supposed to be married. And the promise is, you know, if God's going to put two people together in marriage, then the promise has to be, and so therefore, I'm going to help you out in your marriage. Believe me, over the next 20 years, we needed that rainbow over and over again, because there were times that both of us thought, Lord, this is obviously a mistake. And then we'd think about the rainbow, the things that God had showed us for. No, it's not your mistake. We're just going to have to trust you that you're going to help us work through this. Got other rainbows in my life, like healings. Debbie and I both have so many parts and areas of our body that God has healed us miraculously. When we first married, both of us had back trouble all the time. I mean, each of us were down 3 days, 4 days, 5 days a month with back problems. I'll bet you we haven't been down 3 days in the last 20 years. I mean, you know, that's a rainbow to us that God has promised to heal us. It's something that we can put our hope in. See, that's the whole point of the rainbow, is that if you have these rainbows in life, you have hope. You have hope that God's done it before, God's going to do it again. We went through, gosh, I guess it was 20 years ago now. I've told y'all about this in more detail, but just, you know, we went through this very difficult time financially. I mean, there was 3 years where we were on the brink of financial destruction every day for 3 solid years. And that was the darkest time of my life, most difficult time. And yet, by the time we started getting toward the end of that, I started realizing, even though every day it looks like we're on the brink of destruction, every day God provides. And I just finally came out of that realizing, God's always going to provide for me financially. I just don't have to worry about that anymore. And sure enough, he always has. It's like a rainbow to me. I can look back at that. When things start looking a little dark and a little dim, I can look back and say, yep, there's hope. I've got a rainbow in my life for hope. Remember when Samson killed that lion? Lion started to attack him. He kills the lion with his own hands. And then later he goes back that direction. And the carcass of that lion is still laying there. And a swarm of bees has come into that carcass and started put up the honeycomb and started producing honey. And he was very hungry at the time, and he gets some honey and he eats it. He sustains himself. He takes that honey to his parents and they eat from it. That was like a rainbow in his life. God was telling him, Samson, if you will quit relying on yourself and rely on me, there's always hope. I'll take care of you. And of course, he relied on himself and his own strength, and that got him in trouble. But I suspect that when the time came, you know, they'd put his eyes out, there he is in that big building, he thought about that rainbow, about God's going to provide for me. Even in the carcass of that lion, God's going to provide for me. And I need to put my trust not in my strength, but put my trust in God. And that's what he did. So finding your rainbows is sort of like counting your blessings. You know, we find those promises that God made. We find the times that he's helped us. And we remember the rainbows when we feel helpless. And then God brings us out of that darkness and into light. Well, to kind of come full circle back to the political thing, don't get sucked in during this political season into all this hype about hope and hope in the government and hope in political candidates and all that stuff. Your hope can never, ever rest with politicians or your government, as wonderful as they may be. God is our hope. He is our only hope. God will see us through the toughest times, the darkest times, and when all else seems hopeless, we have hope in God. Let me steal a story from Joel Osteen and tell you about a guy that came to a place of hopelessness, and yet God delivered him, even when it looked like God was trying to kill him. The guy sold his house and his car, and he bought a sailboat and decided he was going to sail around for a while and enjoy the ocean. And not long after he set sail, a big storm comes up, destroys his boat, and puts him ashore on a deserted island. And so, you know, you talk about hopeless, right? Nobody knows where he is. His radio's destroyed. It's kind of out away from everything. And he's feeling pretty hopeless. He decides, well, I'm going to at least stay alive. And so he builds a little grass hut just off the beach, and he finds a source of fresh water, and he starts finding places where he can get food, and he's staying alive, but there's no hope for rescue. And one morning, not long after he'd kind of gotten everything together, he goes up into the jungle to get some food, and he comes back, and his hut is on fire. He had figured out how to get fire going. He thought, well, I'll be okay. And here he is. He's bringing back some food, and the fire has gotten out of the little coconut shell he had it in and caught his hut on fire, and his whole hut is just up in blazes. And he sits down, he puts his face in his hands, and he says, God, I just give up. I mean, I just can't do anything right. This is, nobody's going to ever find me, and now you've burned my house down. Now I'm just going to sit here and die. You know, it felt like Jonah. And so he just sits there on the beach. The sun beats down on him. And later that afternoon, a Coast Guard helicopter shows up and lands on the beach. The guy, elated, you know, oh, I'm rescued. This is great. How did you guys find me? They said, well, you know what? Our cutter was passing by this island out about 8 miles, and it was that great smoky fire you built this morning that let us know there was somebody over here. We didn't even know this place was inhabited. And so we came over to investigate. Well, at the place where it looked like God was trying to kill him and ruin his life, it was actually God's way of bringing hope into his life. There's always hope for us in God, even when it looks like life is over and it looks like that everything has gone wrong. We just need to hang on to hope and let God turn that hope into faith and let that faith make things happen in the spirit world.